Hi, welcome to the Hebrew Club on like the second to last week of the quarter here. We are in Psalm 102, one of our penitential psalms, and remember we had, this was an interesting psalm because of the more difficult grammar and syntax that we've had, and we got through verse 11, and remember here, you know, we're still in his, what is commonly called the lament part of the psalm. And I think you'll see the transition that we make in a couple of verses. But notice at the end of or at verse 11, that's where we finished. Notice he's focusing on the wrath of Yahweh on him. So he's feeling Yahweh's wrath. And so you have this kind of real deadly line. Notice it says, because of your wrath and your anger. All right, so I mean, he's describing his situation, what it's like for him, he's experiencing it as God's anger, because you have lifted me and thrown me. So, I mean, he's describing his experience in theological terms as Yahweh tossing him around, tossing him aside, so to speak. All right, verse 12 then is where we begin and pick it up today, and it goes like this: Yamai Katzel Natui. Vanika Esev Ivash. My days as a shadow are lengthened. Natui is a call passive participle from Nata, a third hey verb, and the yud, the original yud, comes back for the passive participle. So my days are like a lengthened shadow, or a shadow which is lengthened. And I as Esev, and I as herbage, I as a plant, am drying up, Yavash, from Yavash. Okay, a call imperfect from Yavash. So my days are stretched out or lengthened like a shadow, and I am withering like an Asev, like a bush, like some kind of a plant. Okay? Okay, and now notice how everything kind of switches here in the mood of the psalm and in the focus of the psalm. So verse 13, V'atah Yahweh le'olam teshev, Bezikraka Lador Vador. Alright, so notice already you can see the switch in syntax. Now, as for you, O Yahweh, forever Teshev, forever you dwell. You dwell forever. Alright, now I don't know if that's talking about in the sense of you sit, in the sense of you reign over all things forever, or more, you know, he's eternal. All right, maybe it's a little of both. And your Zeker, the remembrance of you, your remembrance is for generation upon generation. All right, so notice he's now turning as he's, you know, from his lament to a different kind of appeal. Okay? Okay, good. Any questions on through verse 13, 12 or 13? Good, Tom, we're at Psalm 102. Ready to start verse 14. So notice he starts off again with another pronoun. Atatakum terachin tzion kiet lechen na ki vamoed. And as for you, see, so notice when you're reading the psalm, the emphasis on the pronoun. As for you, or you, takum, you will rise and you will have mercy on Zion, on Zion. All right. So notice, if you kind of understand it like that, he's asserting his confidence in Yahweh's love for his for Zion, for Jerusalem. And again, behind that assertion, notice, he's telling God this. He's addressing, you will do this, notice. And so behind it, I suppose, are all the promises that Yahweh has made with Israel in his past history with Israel. All right. So notice where he goes from here then. For it is time, key 8, for it is time, lechen na, that's a call, infinitive construct from Chanan, for it is time to show her favor. It is time to show her favor for Moed, for the season, the Moed, the appointed time, has come. That's a very powerful line. So again, notice kind of the confidence of the psalmist coming out of God's wrath. And most of these laments have this kind of thing. But it's an interesting focus that he has, you know, first of all on Zion, and then saying, for the time for you to show favor has come. All right. Any questions on verse 14? Okay, verse 15. Ki ratsu avadka et avaneha ve'et afara yechonenu. For, this is from ratsa, to be favorable towards, or in a sense to love or have favor in. So, and the subject is your servants. For your servants, have favor for is not right. For your servants long for her stones. See, in other words, they have an affection for her stones. And her dust, yechonenu, and they show favor for her dust. Again, this is from the root chanan. Chanan, just like we had in verse 14. So this is an imperfect form. Okay. So for your servants, kind of long for her stones, and they are favorable to her dust. They, one translation said they pity her dust, but I don't think it's that. I think it's a sense of love for Zion and the city and what it represents. Okay. Questions through 15. Good. Verse 16. Ve yireu goyim et shem Yahweh ve kol malkei haaretz et kevodeka. And they and nations will fear. So notice that ve yireu is from the root yare, to be afraid of. This is a call, imperfect. So vav plus imperfect. All right. And nations will fear the name of the Lord. So notice he's not addressing Yahweh so much anymore. In verse, the address has switched again. All right, he's not addressing Yahweh directly. Doesn't seem to be. And all the kings of the earth. Now he does again. And all the kings of the earth, your glory. And a lot of times there's that switch. All right. We really have to step back once we're done with this whole psalm and look at how more carefully how it's structured and how it. Especially in this part of the psalm, why does he keep telling Yahweh something that he already knows? Would be my question. See, he's not really engaging in praise here, but in a sense, when you tell Yahweh something he already knows, like this in this context. C.S. Lewis, I think I mentioned this, has this good comment that why do you do that? Because it completes your own sense of joy. So maybe you could say that. Why does he keep telling Yahweh that you're going to do all this? Well, it completes his own sense of confidence and faith and assurance. You know, it's just like if you see a great sunset, the first thing you want to do is share it with someone. Why? Because it kind of completes your joy. There's nothing worse than seeing a great movie or a great sunset and having no one to tell. All right? So he tells Yahweh you're going to do all this, and in the telling, his own joy and confidence seems to be restored. So maybe that's why we do it too. We praise Yahweh by telling Yahweh stuff he already knows. Alright. Any questions about verse 16? Yeah.
In terms of the elements there in the two parts of in the colo there.
Yes.
Is there any correlation, do you think, the way that you parallels them with like nations and the name of Yahweh in terms of the fear, and then maybe rulers and the glory in terms of power?
I think, when you say common, I mean, this way of expressing yourself in the Psalms, I don't think is that common. Nations will fear the name of the Lord, and all the kings of the earth fear your glory. I mean, you have statements like that, of course, but this whole thing about reference to Zion is, of course, in other Psalms, but in this kind of context, in the context of a lament, to me, I think it's kind of unusual, but I'd have to look at it a little more. Now, if you look at it this way, you remember Deuteronomy said that the tabernacle or the temple is where Yahweh's going to put his name. And it seems to be that he's actually talking about his presence there. It doesn't mean in more of an abstract sense, like some critics suggest that. But remember, Kavod also has that sense of he's really present there. The glory of the Lord dwelt in the tabernacle or the temple. And so I think that maybe that's, if you look at those two in parallel, you don't want to think about them so much in abstract terms, like glory as far as, your greatness or your majesty, but maybe in the more concrete sense.
Yeah.
significance to see
verses before about the stones and the dust of Zion, kind of tying that to
that he's actually present there with his people. Psalm 46, for example, you know, God is in the midst of her. We don't mean like he's everywhere. I mean, you know, he's actually there, and he's made himself specially available there. So, I mean, and for us, for New Testament people, that becomes important for our view of the sacraments and what they mean and how we actually gather around Word and Sacrament where he's really present with his people. I mean, notice those words, name of Yahweh and Kavod, are very pregnant with meaning in that it recalls a whole history of the way God deals with his people, the promises and what he's done in the past. Okay. Verse 17, Kivana Yahweh Tzion, Nira Bekevodo, for Yahweh built Zion. Now notice that this is a Niphal participle, to be seen or to appear. Okay? So, for Yahweh built Zion, appeared in his glory. Alright, so notice again, you get the sense that this is not just an abstract idea that he wants you to consider, but he's actually asking you to go back into the history of God's dealing with his people and remember, hey, he was present with them and what that means. Alright. Verse 18, Pana el tefilat ha arar velo vaza et tefilatam. Alright. He turned to the prayer of the arar, the destitute one. Alright, there's the root is arar, to strip bare. That's the verb behind it. And here you have one of those weird reduplications. You don't see this all the time. So, he turned to the prayer of the RR, and he did not despise Tefillatam, their prayer. Alright? Now, what's interesting to me is, okay, is he referring maybe to the Exodus account in which the people cried to him? And remember, there's a big deal made of how Yahweh certainly has heard when he called Moses in Exodus 3. But it could also be, you know, in a more general sense, kind of habitually in the past, when those who, and that's certainly true in Israel's history too, that what happened at the Exodus was repeated, for example, in the period of the Judges and when the people were in need. So, you know, it's a both and kind of question. But following on the glory and the reference to God's people, I'm sure that those connections are going to be in the mind of the author. Any questions through 18?
Could you take that as a perfect expressing his own certainty that God has heard him right now in this situation, heard the prayers?
So you would translate more in a present tense. God hears, like that maybe?
Yeah, or even more certainly,
God has heard.
Kind of like the amen at the end of a prayer.
Yeah, so that the har-har actually refers to him. That's very possible.
That
yeah, so that he's labeling himself this way. No, I think that's a good possibility to think, to consider. Notice he does go to third plural suffix on tefillatam, as if he's referring to a class of people with har here. But so I don't know. That's one thing to consider. Verse 19 then. Tikatev zot ledor acharon ve'am nivra. Yehalel Yah. This will be written. Notice that that's a Niphal from Katav Imperfect. This will be written for a generation Acharon, for a future generation. Acharon refers to the future, remember, and Rishon, the past. So, this will be written for a future generation. And a people, now look at this word, a people Nivra, that's a Niphal from Bara, to create, to be created. And a people, most translate this as referring to a group of people to be created, and a people yet to be created. Okay? Who, Yehalel, who will praise Yahweh. Alright? Now I don't know. The interesting thing is this the this referring to what comes before, or what comes after, or both? And maybe we can answer that as we go on a little bit and see. So this will be written for the last generation, a people to be created who will praise Yahweh. See, now you wonder, who's he referring to? And you can't help but bring yourself into this. And for, you know, this is a very interesting psalm. Verse 20. Ki hishkif mimarom kodsho Yahweh mishamayim el eretz hibit. For he looked down. Okay, now notice I'm translating them all past tense, as if referring to events in the past. So he looked down from the height of his holiness. Namely, and notice the genitive would be kind of a adjectival, from his holy height. So notice the subject is Yahweh. For he looked down from his holy height. Yahweh. Oh, I'm sorry. Yahweh would be with the next. Oh, here's a good example. Look at this, at how the editors divided the Kola differently than the Masoretes. The Masoretes wants you to put Yahweh with the second Kola of that verse, second colon. For he looked down from his holy height, stop. Yahweh, from the heavens to the earth, looked down. See, now here, notice, it really recalls to me the Exodus account. Especially now, notice the next verse. Lishmoa en kat asir lefatech b'nei temuta. To listen, here's an infinitive construct. I'm taking that lamed as purpose. He looked down, okay, in order to listen to the enkat, to the cry of the asir, of the prisoner. To open, and now you have to understand the prisoner something, to open for the b'nei temuta. Look at temuta. The root in there is mavet, death. That's what it means, death. It only occurs like one other time. And so, in order to open up, we probably say to free the, it's sons of death literally, but notice B'nai here doesn't mean sons. It means, it's talking about a class or group of people. To free those who are dead, people dead. Again, he seems to be, okay, what's he talking about? Is he talking about the Exodus, going from the land of death to the land of life? Is it more than that? Alright. Verse 22, Lesaper betzion shem Yahweh, to proclaim, to recount in Zion the name of Yahweh, utehilato, and his praise in Jerusalem. All right, again, notice how you have a series of infinitives, probably of purpose, now explaining, you know, his the action of looking down from heaven. So he looked down to listen to the cry, to free the those bound by death or dead, to proclaim in Zion Yahweh's name and his praise in Jerusalem. Okay? Any questions? Really good. Verse 23. Behikavetz amim yachdav umam lakot la'avod et Yahweh. Okay, notice that this is a nifah from kavatz, to be gathered. Okay. In people being gathered together, when people are gathered together, and kingdoms to serve Yahweh. So when people are gathered together, and when kingdoms, and you have to understand, gathered, are gathered to serve Yahweh. So notice how I think this picks up in verse from verse 19. Notice this will be written for a later generation of people who will be created, who will praise Yahweh when people are gathered together and kingdoms are gathered together in order to serve Yahweh. See? So that in between is a recounting. Again, you see very strong motifs and themes from the Exodus, but also from other periods in Israel's history where Yahweh came to the rescue of his people. All right. We're going to stop here and finish this up next time. Does anyone have any questions?
So the 21 and 22 are the, like, the content of when they meet?
Well, I think you make a case for that. Yeah, this will be written. What's going to be written? So you notice the key clause, that he looked down from his holy height, from heaven's to the earth. He looked down to hear the cry of the prisoner, to free them, to speak in Zion the name of the Lord. See, when people, then that picks it up when people are gathered together. So Notice otherwise that line, verse 23, is just kind of hanging there. What's he talking about? So notice the psalmist's vision is going to the future and to what the past acts of Yahweh on behalf of his people are going to mean to a future generation. It's really neat. Alright, good. Yeah, we will finish this up, and then we go to Psalm 130. So we got two more of these. So we finish this up, and then we go to Psalm 130. We'll probably start it, get a few verses in. That's a real short one too, so we can finish that pretty quick. All right. Thanks very much, you guys. Take care.